This week on Come Receive the Light, we continue to explore our month-long theme of discovering the true you. In the Garden of Eden, Adam was lonely. God saw that and said it wasn't good for man to be alone, so he created the first partnership, a way in which two together made each other stronger and better.
It's all a heightening of the fact that, as St. John Chrysostom says, there is no greater unity possible between two human beings in all of human life as the unity of husband and wife. And then he adds, if they are united as they ought to be.
Dr. David Ford has co-authored a new book, and we'll hear about that a bit later in our program. First, we'll learn more about a way in which young people discover their strengths and build their character.
Absolutely. Venturing has basically four broad areas of emphasis. Adventure, certainly we want them to have fun and learn while they're having fun. It provides and affords them opportunity for leadership. There's an opportunity for personal growth. And there's an emphasis to service back to the church, back to the community, and so forth.
So we know that your daughters are Venture Scouts, and maybe you could talk a little bit about how that participation has made a difference in their lives, or at least from the perspective as their father.
That's the voice of Father Gregory Joyce, the rector of St. Vladimir Orthodox Church in the greater Ann Arbor, Michigan area, and he will lead our first conversation today, and we'll get the answer to that question a little bit later. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology. Again, you're listening to Come Receive the Light, a part of the Orthodox Christian Network, and we're on the web at myocn.net. Many of you are probably listening to us there right now. We're also all over social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, Pinterest, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Let us know you're listening and check out the many ways in which you can become involved. Again, the website is myocn.net. We're nonprofit, and your financial involvement would be a big help. There's an understatement. And a huge encouragement. Again, the website, myocn.net. And now with that first conversation, here's Father Gregory.
Most people know about Boy and Girl Scouts, but few have heard of Venture Scouting. We have invited Mr. Harold Hagen to tell us about this youth-led organization and how these types of gatherings can benefit communities. Harold is the Southern Region Area 9 Venture Advisor for Alabama and Georgia, and he is on the Southern Region Board for the Eastern Orthodox Committee on Scouting. Welcome, Harold.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me this afternoon.
Really glad to have you here. So let's get to the question that all of our listeners want to know the answer to, and that is, what is Venture Scouting?
Well, Venture Scouting is an older youth program, part of the Boy Scouts of America. Units can be chartered as a male unit, all female, or co-ed. Most commonly, they're chartered as co-ed. And a big difference between what most of our listeners might be familiar with the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts, is the age range on this is from 13 and finished with the 8th grade until 21 years old, or 14 to 21 regardless of the grade. Added emphasis with the Venturing program on youth-led, youth-driven activities and adventures and learning opportunities.
So it also gives the young people not just an opportunity to participate, but also to be leaders, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Venturing has basically four broad areas of emphasis. Adventure, certainly we want them to have fun and learn while they're having fun. It provides and affords them opportunity for leadership. There are roles within the crew, which is what we call the organizational unit for the youth. There's an opportunity for personal growth. The youth set goals and objectives as they go through the advancement program, and there's an emphasis to service back to the church, back to the community, and so forth.
So we have these crews, and they're independent of each other, it sounds like, but are there times when they do activities together?
Very much so. The structure works at the unit level. The unit is typically chartered by a church or other organization, and they're all within a scouting council, a geographic area, usually several counties, depending upon the state that we're talking about. And then it goes out from there to an area, which is commonly one, two, or more states. And then the Boy Scouts of America have four regions, and that's the makeup within the national organization.
Just to clarify, because I do know that our listeners are familiar with Boy Scouting, would that regional or area sort of association, would that include Boy Scout troops also, or this is just Venture Scouting troops that are crews that, that are together there?
It includes Boy Scouts as well. Boy Scouts and Venturers have mutual opportunities to pursue some of the high adventure bases, for example, that the Boy Scouts have around the country. They also perform in various projects that the Scouts have at any given time together. Not always, it can be done independently, but within the Council you see a spread out between the Cub Scouts, the Boy Scouts, and the Venturers sharing properties and activities.
Got it. And so in Boy Scouts, there is this highest award called Eagle Scout. Is there something similar in Venture Scouting?
There is. There is an advancement program. There are four stages. The comparable equivalency, if you will, to Eagle Scout would be the Summit Award. And to earn the Summit Award, very much like the Eagle Scout, there is a very detailed, structured, more of a complex service project that takes some time to plan out, get it approved, and execute the project. There's an emphasis on having certain level of training, of teaching others that knowledge, and you get to the point where you train the trainer. Also personal growth projects and goals and objectives that the youth have to go through and meet, and service. So many service hours have to be attained for each of the four levels in order to earn the Summit Award, and that culminates with a board of review with adults and youth, ultimately signed off on by the council executive, and then on to the national office for approval.
That is very, very interesting. So when we talk about them getting an award, we can let's look at it the other way. What is the benefit of having a scouting program in the community in addition to other youth groups or dance or athletics or other kind of youth activities that are often found in parishes? How does a scouting program also benefit the community?
Well, I think that's a great question. So one of our challenges in the Orthodox Church, as well as any church out there, is retaining our youth. We read articles and we see information all the time about our youth walking away from the faith for multitudes of reasons. So having a scout unit within the community that's fun, that's exciting and interesting, will certainly help maintain the youth that we have and quite possibly draw other youth or other families into the community by having a scouting unit there. I think the other benefit that we see here is that, for example, Goya, my take on it from my experience with my own daughters, is it's very much a spiritual and cultural group, and they do some fun activities. But with the scouting model, we get much deeper into the opportunity to develop leadership skills, group dynamics, high adventure, project management. I think it's just a higher level, and I think that piques to the interest of older boys and girls.
Absolutely. As you get older, to be able to challenge them and give them leadership opportunities, it sounds really wonderful. So we know that your daughters are Venture Scouts, and maybe you could talk a little bit about how that participation has made a difference in their lives, or at least from the perspective as their father.
Well, I've watched my daughters. I think they're probably reasonably typical teenage girls, and they're into their electronics, they're into their technology. But like most kids, I think that as time goes forward, quite often there's less and less of an opportunity for the kids to interface, to speak directly with other youth and adults, and get outside of the home and experience different activities, maybe that would be good for them. So in the case of my daughters here, I mean, I could talk about the activities that the young ladies have been on that they've helped to plan. My daughters have gone for a couple of weeks backpacking in the mountains of New Mexico and planning every aspect of a trip there, from transportation to logistics. We've gone on a 150-mile canoe trip from northern Minnesota into southern Ontario. So they've had some great experiences, but to their career, my oldest daughter actually was nominated by the Scouts to be a youth member of the Board of Directors for the Atlanta Area Council, and she's had the opportunity to do public speaking and presentations to adult leaders in the community and draw attention, positive attention, to the program, to her faith. She's spoken to at board meetings for the Scouts at a regional and national level, and held a position of authority as an officer at the various levels as well, where she has planned and orchestrated various events. So I see a lot of the building of confidence, self-esteem, some important life skills and leadership skills as a result of participating in scouting.
That's very interesting. I assume that most of the people who are going to be hearing this interview will, for the first time, be hearing about Venture Scouting. So could you tell our listeners how they can get more information on that, on Venture Scouting?
Absolutely. We consider Venture Scouting the hidden gem in the backyard of scouting here. It basically came about in 1998. But to your question there, very simply here, if our listeners want to write this down, beascout.org, BEASCOUT.org. They're able to put their zip code in as well as contact information, and that will refer them to local units in their area. If they'd like general information in more depth than what I can give you in a simple interview, then they would go to scouting.org/venturing. And honestly, any search engine, if you just drop in Venturing BSA, Boy Scouts of America, it'll pop up and take you right to where you need to go to get some more information about the program.
As you were giving us the answer, I thought, well, what if I'm a priest and I want to start a scouting troop or a crew, venture crew in my parish? Where would I find the information about that?
Well, I would encourage you, within your area there, in the city you live in, the county you live in, there's certainly established scouting there. So I think if you, same thing, search engine, if you just program venturing in your area, the name of your city or the name of your county, certainly something will pop up there. And if you reach out to the scouting professionals in your area, there are a team of people that will come by and give you some more information about the program and help get you started, help you plan and train your first several months of the program so that it can be successful for both you and for your adults. And there's a number of talented and eager volunteers just ready to help as well. And at the end of the program, if you like, I'd be glad to provide my contact information as well.
Thanks for sharing that, Harold. I think it's going to be really interesting for our listeners. One more question, and then we'll ask you for your contact information, and that is, what's a kind of a critical mass to start a crew? You know, how many young people do you really need to sort of have a crew, let's say, in your parish?
I think you need to have at least five passionate, interested youth that like to do outdoor activities, and I think you can take it from there. A perfect number in a perfect world, if you could script it, I think you would have 10. So five you absolutely need, 10 it would be great. If you have any more than that, I'll give you an example. What I see at my crew, I have 30 people on paper, and at any given meeting, I usually have between 10 and 15 active. And when I plan my monthly activities, if I get 8 to 12 of the youth that don't have conflicts with other things going on in their life, it's a success. And it's enough to where it's a successful venue. Everyone can perform and do the necessary activities and skills to make it a good event.
Excellent. I think that's helpful for the priests or parish council presidents or those who are listening in and thinking that this would be a good thing to start in one of our parishes. To have that information is really helpful. So, Harold, there's going to be a lot of people who are interested in what you've had to say here today. Could you please share contact information so that folks could reach out to you and learn more?
Absolutely. Again, my name is Harold Hagen, H-A-G-E-N. My email address, which is the best way to reach me, is mrhhagen@yahoo.com. And that's spelled M as in Mike, R-H-H-A-G-E-N as in November, @yahoo.com.
Wonderful. Harold, thanks so much for joining us today.
Father, appreciate it so much. Have a good afternoon, sir.
Thank you.
Who shakes the whole earth with holy thunder and leaves us breathless in awe and wonder? The King of glory, the King above all kings.
That follow-up information about Venture Scouting will be on our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. You're listening to Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network, and I'm Mike Trout. The greatest adventure in life is following the King of all kings, Jesus Christ. For more information about that adventure, please get in touch with us through our contact information on the website and allow us the privilege of talking with you, answering your questions. That's myocn.net, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, Pinterest, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And now with our feature conversation, here is our host, Father Chris.
A new book, Glory and Honor, Orthodox Christian Resources on Marriage, edited by three people, David Ford, Mary Ford, and Alfred Kentigern Sievers, was recently published by St. Vladimir's Seminary Press. You may be familiar with Dr. David's interviews on the lives of the married saints, which we've covered many times. He is beginning a new series with us concerning marriage through the lens of Orthodoxy. Welcome, Dr. Ford.
Thank you, Father Chris.
This new book is a little over 450 pages and covers many of the aspects of marriage. It is a collection of various Orthodox authors, professors, speakers. There's 8 sections, and they touch on many topics, including the mystery of marriage, its holy calling, family, spiritual warfare, monasticism, and contemporary concerns. My goodness, this is a fabulous book. What inspired this collaboration?
Well, Father Chris, several primary considerations guided me and my wonderful co-editors. First, we wanted to draw on the vast treasures of wisdom in our Orthodox tradition and begin to explore at a deeper level the importance and profundity of marriage. And so we began to gather various materials that would truly inspire and enrich our own Orthodox married people to give them a higher vision for their marriages, as well as many practical ways to enrich and strengthen their marriages, and to offer hope, encouragement, and practical advice to those who may be struggling in their marriages. Secondly, we wanted to encourage our young unmarried people to have a high and pure vision for marriage, to see and understand it as a high and holy calling from God Himself, who is the creator and fashioner of marriage. Thirdly, in light of the increasing confusion about marriage and related issues in our contemporary society, we wanted to present a clear picture of what really is the Orthodox understanding of marriage, which includes the foundational understanding that true marriage can only ever be between one man and one woman, and that social justice, especially for children, depends so much on strong traditional family life, with mother and father both present and active in raising the children. Several of the essays in the book address these issues in various ways. And we also wanted to produce a book that would bring forth a very wide, comprehensive Orthodox understanding of marriage. So we intentionally invited people from many different Orthodox jurisdictions and geographic areas to participate. As a result, we have 26 contributors writing essays for the book. 8 of these contributors are from the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese, including Presbyter Carrie Pappas, the coordinator for seminarian and clergy couple care for the Greek Archdiocese, as well as Dr. Philip Mamalakis and Dr. Timothy Patitsas, who both teach at Holy Cross Seminary. 7 of the contributors are from the OCA. 3 are priests in the Antiochian Archdiocese. And the very popular author, Frederica Matthews Green, she has 2 essays in the book. She's the wife of an Antiochian priest. 2 essays are by priests in Rokor, and another one is by a Serbian Orthodox priest in America. And we also have included an essay by the world-renowned Orthodox bioethicist, Dr. Tristram Engelhardt, and another one by Father Zacharias of the highly respected monastery of St. John the Baptist in Essex, England. And we have one by the Athenite monk and author, Father Alexios Trader. And then in an appendix, the collection presents official hierarchical and synodal statements on marriage by the Assembly of Canonical Bishops in America, the OCA, the Greek Archdiocese, the Antiochian Archdiocese, and Rokor. And then in one of my most favorite portions of the book, we present particularly insightful and inspiring quotations on marriage from various church fathers and teachers across the centuries, from St. Ignatius of Antioch in the early 2nd century to the Russian priest Father John Christian Keen of the early 21st century.
Well, it's a huge undertaking, and you do have a great cross-section.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things you mentioned, I think, will frame our conversation going forward.
Okay.
The first question that I need to ask you, mm-hmm. from your research, what are the origins of marriage? Because today we see everybody trying to define marriage as they want to do it. So why don't we start with that?
Right. Well, the traditional Orthodox understanding is rooted in the Holy Scriptures, According to the book of Genesis, marriage began in the Garden of Eden when the Lord God made Eve from Adam's rib and presented her to him to be his wife and commanded them to be fruitful and multiply. So at its root, we understand marriage to be a gift of God to mankind. And in every Orthodox marriage service, it's very clearly God himself who is understood to forge the bride and groom together as one. As the celebrant prays during the service, do thou the same, Lord, stretch out thy hand and unite this thy servant with this thine handmaiden. And, of course, we remember what Jesus says, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. So, again, there's Jesus affirming it's God who does the joining in the wedding service.
And let's go just a notch further.
Okay.
And when we speak of the Orthodox traditional understanding of marriage, that is different from other faiths. So how is it different?
Well, it's hard to generalize, but it is quite clear that through the centuries, Western Christianity has had a more legalistic understanding of marriage. Instead of the emphasis being on God being the one doing the uniting of the couple, marriage in the West has been typically seen more as a legal contract between the bride and groom, with the strength of the marriage depending upon the strength of their promises to each other. And most of the Protestant reformers did not even consider marriage to be a sacrament. And this is certainly one of the major underlying reasons why there is so much confusion about marriage in Western society today. Now, in contrast to typical Roman Catholic and Protestant wedding ceremonies, the Orthodox marriage service does not include vows said by the bride and groom to each other. And it also does not have that phrase, till death do you part. This is because in the traditional Orthodox understanding, marriage is meant to last forever. As the celebrant cries out to the Lord after taking the crowns off from the heads of the new husband and wife, receive their crowns into thy kingdom, preserving them spotless, blameless, and without reproach unto ages of ages.
I have to tell you, that's one of the most beautiful prayers. I've probably done over 1,000 weddings in my 3 decades of priesthood. And that last prayer is just so, so powerful.
Yes. Yes, it sure is.
In the first essay of mm-hmm. The Glory of Marriage, you uh-huh. wrote about intimacy in marriage and the sense that the two become one in more than just a physical, intimate sense.
Right.
But also in a spiritual sense. Could you speak to us a little bit about that kind of intimacy?
Sure. In the traditional Orthodox understanding, every marriage is called to represent or to show forth or to illustrate the intimate, unconditional love that Christ has for his holy church, as well as the intense love that God has for every human soul. As St. Paul says in the passage in Ephesians 5 that's read at every Orthodox wedding, quote, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved his church and gave himself for her. And in the Gospels, Jesus himself quotes Adam's words about a man leaving his father and mother to cleave to his wife, to be joined with her in one flesh. And in some of the lives of the married saints, there is reference to the husband and wife being, in a certain sense, like two souls in one body. It's all a heightening of the fact that, as St. John Chrysostom says, there is no greater unity possible between two human beings in all of human life as the unity of husband and wife. And then he adds, if they are united as they ought to be. In other words, if they really live conscious of this profound unity.
You know, David, there are so many references in the Bible to heaven.
Yeah.
But there are some that say heaven, it compares heaven as a marriage feast.
Yes.
And as Jesus, as the bridegroom.
Mm-hmm.
There's a need to understand marriage as something holy and sacred. So How does a Christ-centered marriage reflect God and paradise?
Well, as we've said, every marriage is called by God to reflect, to be a living image of Christ's love for his church. And really, what could be more holy and sacred than this? Mm-hmm. And this means that married people are called to offer to God, to sanctify every dimension of their married life. And this includes their marital relations, which are already intrinsically good because provided by the good God who loves mankind. And in addition, what can give a more powerful taste of paradise, of heaven in this life, than a marriage in which each spouse is steadfastly devoted to the other in the love and joy of Christ?
So in reading this book, David, and obviously it's going to take the average person some time to be able to sit down and absorb everything that you put in here, but I'm thrilled to see that a book of this nature is finally out there. At least it's the first one I know of this magnitude. And it's important today because many times the church is quiet about this issue, and we allow society to define marriage when really they're defining it just according to the whim of that particular decade or season. So I'm thrilled that you're doing this. Let me ask you this. What is the most important element of marriage that you hope the reader understands from this collection of essays?
Well, I think I would say it's that marriage is a gift and calling from God, our Creator and our Savior, and that by His help and linked with our determination, we can make our marriage a theophany of Christ's love for His church.
Tell us a little bit about the book's dedication, because you did dedicate it.
To Father Matthew Baker. He was a Greek Orthodox priest here in America. He taught at Holy Cross Seminary. He was a brilliant scholar and a very dear friend to Mary and me. He died at the young age of 37, tragically, leaving behind his wife and six children. He had a wonderful marriage himself, which, along with his tremendously extensive scholarship, gave him much potential to write about marriage. As it is, we do have in the book two sermons that he preached that relate to marriage.
That's wonderful. That's really... Yeah, Father Matthew was quite an individual.
Well, yes.
The book, Glory and Honor, Orthodox Christian Resources on Marriage, is available on the OCN Amazon bookstore and would make a great engagement or wedding gift, maybe even a book club. A link will be available on our website. Dr. Ford, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Father Chris.
The link to that OCN Amazon web store is right on our homepage at myocn.net. Again, myocn.net. Thank you for spending another half hour or so with us here at the Orthodox Christian Network, listening to Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and we'll be back next week with another broadcast. I hope you'll join us, and I hope you'll tell your friends to join us as well. We're on the web and all over social media. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, Pinterest, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And if there's somewhere else we should be, well, let us know. We'll follow up on that. Have a great rest of your day. And until we are together again, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.